One of the most popular interviews on Saturday morning of recent times was the conversation with British nature and travel writer Robert McFarlane, author of The Old Ways, Landmarks and Underland, among others. So we thought we'd talk to him again, this time about his contribution to alleviating the isolation and boredom some are suffering as a consequence of, yes, COVID-19. He set up a Twitter reading group to build conversation and community around something other than, yes, COVID-19. No surprise, if you've read McFarlane's Landmarks, that he has proposed Nan Shepherd's The Living Mountain as the first book. There have been dozens of other suggestions, of course. Robert McFarlane's with us now. Hi, Robert. How are you?
Hi, Kim. It's good to hear your voice again. We've spoken a bit over the years, and this is probably the strangest context that we'll ever meet in, I guess.
I know. Where are you?
I'm in my Cambridge home. It's pretty edgy times here. We're gradually shutting down. We're late as a country, I think, given where we are in the storm that's breaking over us. But spring is breaking over us too, and that's a small mercy at this moment.
No surprise about Nan Shepherd. Did everybody agree with you that Nan Shepherd's The Living Mountain is the first book that you're going to be discussing?
I can't say it was unanimous. I mean, there are thousands of suggestions. I think we'll have thousands of people reading along around the world. I've run a few reading groups online before, and none of them under these circumstances or anything like them. But one of them was The Dark is Rising by Susan Cooper, that great fantasy classic from the late 60s. And we read that in midwinter a couple of years ago. And then I did The Rings of Saturn, W.G. Zebelt's great walking prose fiction, and now we come to this book. I'm drawn to it because I love it so much, and it's I've traveled with it in so many ways for so many years, but it seemed right in some ways. Yeah,
I'm glad you fought off suggestions of doing Albert Camus' The Plague.
Daniel Defoe's Journal of a Plague Year. I'm reading that at the moment, and the echoes across the centuries are uncanny and unsettling. But no, I wanted to choose a book that would take us out, but also, I mean, so this is it's a slender book. It's about 30,000 words. It was written at a time of world crisis. It was written in the closing years of the Second World War, and there are noises off from that conflict. But it's set in the mountains of northeast Scotland, and it is fabulously attentive to them, beautifully, lovingly, carefully observant of their weather and their geology and their people and their creatures. But it also radiates outwards so powerfully to huge questions, the questions that we're all asking ourselves now. What is good? What matters to us when we are in difficulty, when we're stripped back, when what Shepherd calls the elementals are pressing hard on us? And these questions are asked not in an interrogatory way, but they are continually at play. And something about that combination of utter beautiful consolation and these bigger metaphysical questions of value seem to make it right.
You have said of Nan Shepherd that she taught you how to write. The Living Mountain is one of the books that taught you to write.
Well, more than that, even. It taught me how to see and how to look, particularly at mountains. So Shepherd is a woman, Anna Nan Shepherd. She was brought up in northeast Scotland from the late 19th century onwards. She lived in a pretty pinback Calvinist context, and yet she forged a fabulous independent furrow in that culture. She was up in the mountains in her tweed skirt, striding around looking like a great golden eagle feather, as her friend Ellen Clouston once described her to me. And she walked into the mountains. This is the wonderful distinction that she makes, that preposition so important. She didn't walk up them. She was not a summiteer. She was a pilgrim, And she loved walking around, and she loved passes as much as peaks. And that those are the things that really changed the way I think about mountains and landscape more broadly.
She always wore a skirt and not trousers.
Well, sometimes she wore nothing at all. There's some of her wonderful descriptions that I think would not have played so well in Deeside in the early 20th century at the Kirk, where include skinny dipping descriptions, though she doesn't call it that, in the cold, cold waters of Loch Arn, up in the cradle of the granite cradle of the Cairngorms. And she writes, it's a very deep loch set in a steep-sided corrie, drains the water from a huge part of that huge range. And she swam in it, and she describes swimming out over what feels to her like an abyss and of water, but she's buoyant above it. And that's where we are now, still buoyant above it. But it's hard not to read this book suddenly as though it is an eerie premonition of where we are.
She's a very interesting character, isn't she, Nan Shepherd? She lived in the same house for 88 years.
Well, you're right. How about that for a time of self-isolation?
No.
I mean, I'm thinking also of Xavier de Maistre's great quote-unquote travel book, Voyage to the End of My Room, which is written in the, I think, late 18th century after he's put under room imprisonment following a duel. And he writes one of the great travel books without going further than his own desk. That's where we are now. Nan lived a version of that. She didn't need to move very far. We might say that like an old-fashioned compass, she had one needle, one foot placed very firmly in a single site, and then the other spun and roved. But mostly she went up into the mountains that were not too far west of her house, a few dozen miles west, the Cairngorms.
And in a way, I mean, we could, this is by no means a justification, but because it needs no justification, New Zealand's a long way from the Cairngorms, but her particular attention to one place gave her writing and her observations this universality, did it not?
Yeah, well, that's so well put. I mean, I've been talking and filming and writing and loving this book for 15 years now, and I've had so many conversations with people from all around the world. You don't need to have ever been to the Cairngorms. You don't need to have been to Britain. You don't even need to have climbed a mountain to love this book. I met a young Singaporean man, Samuel Chagg, deep in the Cairngorms years ago. And as I do with many people, I pressed a copy of the book on him. I had one in my pack. Got these wonderful letters from him subsequently after he traveled back to Singapore, which is probably as unlike an ecology as you could find to the Cairngorms. It speaks to many hearts, this book, and it would be wonderful if listeners from New Zealand came and joined the many readers from all around the world. And I really hope, I mean, we're going to need each other. We're going to need to keep our brains moving, our imaginations moving, and our hearts beating in the best sense through this time. And words, dreams can do this, but also conversations with people we've never met across time and space. So, you know, this is a tiny, tiny part of that. And I can't wait to read and think with people.
Do you know how many you've got following you on the Twitter?
Well, I mean, the account, my Twitter feed has got 170,000-odd followers. So we're picking up more all the time. I mean, the original tweet got 12,000 likes, something like this, and thousands of responses. So, you know, they're coming. People are coming from Canada, from Australia. The book is finding its way. It's available as an audio book. It's available as an e-book pretty cheaply. And of course, as a book in its own right, though those are getting hard to get your hands on right now. So, I mean, if your listeners want to come join me, I'm at Rob G. MacFarlane, or just search Robert MacFarlane on Twitter, and I'm going to post some instructions about the group at the weekend, and then we'll probably get reading in about a week's time, because something we have more of than we used to right now is days and time.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got a link to that feed up on our webpage. Why, Robert, was the book written, as you say, in the 1940s, but not published until 1977, which was only about 4 years before Nan Shepherd died.
Yeah, this, well, it's a mystery, not a total mystery, but it's, she calls it her traffic of love, which is a strange and slightly awkward phrase, but I know what she means. She wrote it, you know, from a private heart, I think, and almost without anticipation of its publication. Certainly she'd never have dreamed that she would be the face of the Scottish £5 note, as she now is. which brought me great pleasure, but I'm not sure would have brought her that much pleasure. She's in 6 million pockets and 10,000 chip shops. But we think she sort of was put off from publishing. Oh, you know, it's the war. Who would want a book like this? And perhaps written by a woman as well. I mean, one of the things she does magnificently is invert and disrupt the tradition of male mountaineering literature, which is, if I can put it like this, pretty climax focused. And
getting to the top, summiting. Yes.
Getting to the top. And Nan was, I mean, she loved her. She loved the tops of mountains, but she loved their lochs and their passes and their cliffs and their ridges as well. So she was a revolutionary in her very quiet, gentle, wise way. And I think she was modest too. She wasn't a thrusting person. And that all has something to do with why this book never was published really before she died. And then it was published in a very modest small edition in 1977. And now hundreds of thousands of people in many languages have found their way to this book. It's found a whole new generation of readers and more to come in the weeks ahead, I hope.
Do you know who's reading the audiobook?
I do. Well, Tilda Swinton, wonderful Tilda Swinton, what a match. She reads the main book. I helped bring the book back into print in 2011, The Living Mountain, and I wrote that point a long, very long essay accompanying it. That's now an afterword. And Jeanette Winterson also is there. We've both read our contributions. But Tilda, what a reader. Perfect.
All right. Not Scottish, though, is she?
Tilda Swinton?
Is she?
Well, she lives in the Highlands, and she's, I mean, if anyone has a voice of ice and granite, I'd say it's Tilda, so maybe that's better than Scottish accent.
No, that's a good description. What are you not able to do, Robert, on account of the pandemic? What were your plans that you have had to shelve?
Well, I mean, because Corona, as my daughter would put it in her abbreviated text speak. But, I mean, everyone has lost so much and many have lost lives. So I guess all I'll say that's of relevance here is that I would be getting on a sleeper train to the Highlands on Wednesday and being up in these in adjacent hills to the Cairngorms, and that fills my heart every time I do that, and it won't get that. So I'll have to read my way up there with Nan.
And so you will spend what? Maybe how long will you spend on a particular book before going to the next one on your plan?
Yeah, well, I mean, Nan's Living Mountain's a short book. I've been thinking about this. I mean, the chapters are really only perhaps 15 pages each, so maybe we'll sort of 2 or 3 days per chapter. I mean, people have got busy lives, much going on, illness and beyond, and children right now. So, but I think that'll fit into people's lives. We'll probably have that done in 2 or 3 weeks. And then I suspect we'll still need more books right then. So I'm thinking of, I'm going to be involved in another book club on Robin Wall Kimmerer's Braiding Sweetgrass, glorious book about indigenous knowledge and plant science and plants, the floral world. And then, I mean, I was thinking about Middlemarch, a long, long book, freely available online, of course, as an e-text, and one that people will be able to get if we're able to get very little else. And, you know, all by women, all works of wisdom.
Why all by women? Is this a policy on your part for this programme?
A policy would be overstating it, but I love writing by women, and it still needs to be to be brought out, some of it particularly. And Nan's a good example. I mean, she wrote to the Scottish novelist Neil Gunn with the manuscript of The Living Mountain in it's sort of probably about 1943. And Gunn sort of said, it was slightly kind of pat on the head, you know, well done. It's, you know, very, very good, wonderful book. But it probably is not going to find a publisher, more or less. And that's one reason it went in the drawer for 33 years. And so, you know, it's not a policy, but it brings me pleasure to read women's voices and to share women's voices.
Lovely to talk to you, Robert. Thank you, Robert McFarlane, whose Twitter link is on our webpage, and you can participate in the conversation.